If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Five,
four,
three,
two,
one. But who's counting, right?
His name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
Please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's The Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, I.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett. You know why you're here, listening, watching, doing all the things we do here on The Takeout. We're in Denver, Colorado. I'll explain why later, but we're in the office of the governor of Colorado, the recently reelected governor of Colorado, Democrat Jared Polis. Governor, it's good to see you.
Major, welcome to our great state. We're excited to have you here.
So let's talk about some Beltway things. President Biden, should he run for reelection?
You know, Major, I thought I got out of the Beltway when I left Congress after 10 years and ran for governor. Of course, that's something that the president and his wife and their family are going to discuss, and he certainly hasn't shared any confidence with me, but that'll be a very personal decision for what he wants to do.
Would you support him if he does?
Would I support him over other candidates like Donald Trump? Absolutely. So I want to see what, it's very perspective at this point, who's going to run, who are the candidates. But I've enjoyed working with President Biden these last 3 years and look forward to what he decides going forward.
If he runs, would you imagine any other Democrat would run against him?
You know, I have no idea, Major. I'm sure there would be some. I think the real question is, are there any, you know, major, not, pardon the pun, not major, major
significant
Democrats
running.
Significant Democrats running. I don't know. Again, I think he's managed the Democratic coalition effectively. I don't think there's any parts of the party that are particularly upset with his leadership. He just has to go through the process of figuring out, do I have the fire in my belly? Do I want to do this and lead not just, of course, America, but of course the President of the United States is in many ways the leader of the free world, and does he want to do that for another term?
Would the Democratic Party be bereft if he did not run for re-election?
Well, Major, I in no way, shape, or form, you know, speak for the Democratic Party. I mean, that's obviously the party I'm a member of, and I'm governor of Colorado, so I really don't know if there's a monolithic party reaction. I mean, there's people of all walks of life and across the country that are, you know, call themselves Democrats, and some wanted somebody to Biden's left, some want some to Biden's right, you know, some want somebody just like President Biden. So, I mean, there's no monolithic answer to what you're asking.
Let me rephrase it then. Would the Democratic bench be so weak as to not have a good alternative if President Biden were not to seek reelection?
Look, I think that there's a lot of talent in on both sides. I think that the challenge is always assembling, you know, a winning coalition, which is what President Biden did so well on the Democratic side. It's what President Trump, unfortunately, did in many ways, I would argue, you know, sort of catering to the worst in everybody, but nevertheless built, you can't say a majority, but at least the Electoral College majority. Mm-hmm. Despite losing the popular vote to Hillary Clinton as well as to Joe Biden.
Do you have aspirations for the presidency?
No, Major, I really don't have the fire in my belly to do that. I'm super excited to be governor of Colorado, just
reelected. People mention it, though, to me.
Well, people are welcome to mention it. Those people aren't me, so people can say whatever they want. It's a free country. I really am excited to have this job for the next 4 years. Very ambitious agenda of what we want to accomplish here, reducing housing costs, implementing free preschool and already implemented kindergarten, improving achievement in our schools, fostering the best business environment in the country to help grow businesses, and continuing to cut property taxes and income taxes.
We'll get to Colorado, I promise, Governor. The document story in Washington, as you observe it from Denver, your thoughts?
Well, I posted something recently to my Facebook on this. I was in Congress for 10 years. So I remember we had access to classified documents. We go to the SCIF.
There was a process.
Yeah. You're not even allowed to bring your cell phone in. You leave your cell phone outside. You go in there. You review what you want to review. And you're not allowed to leave the room with any of it. So that same parameter should apply to the executive branch. I mean, members of the Intelligence Committee, members of Congress review documents all the time. Maybe someone somewhere tried to steal one, I don't know. But in general, there's a very strong protocol. You are not able to leave the room with a classified document. That whether you're Mike Pence or Donald Trump or Joe Biden or any executive official, they should have those same basic parameters around how classified documents are reviewed.
Do you see any legal difference between those three cases, Pence, Biden, and Trump?
I haven't reviewed the legal aspects of those cases. It's my understanding that President Trump and his attorneys refused cooperation with the authorities. I don't believe that happened in the case of Vice President Pence.
He was the only one that, where a search warrant was authorized.
Right. And I think that was because of the access that was granted by Vice President Pence and by President Biden. But again, I have not reviewed the legal particulars
from
of that.
From a political perspective, are these issues disqualifying?
Well, look, I mean, I think that it's an issue of what the protocols are. I don't have any particular reason to believe that any of the three deliberately stole information. It seems like a protocol that should have been filed as well as kind of foist upon them, meaning they should not have been able to leave a SCIF or a secure location with classified information. So you could argue there's certainly blame on both sides, but I would say we need protocols, and the protocols for members of Congress reviewing classified information fundamentally work, to the best of my knowledge. And why are people in the executive branch apparently able to walk out to non-secure places with classified information? They simply shouldn't be able to do that.
You mentioned former President Trump. Assess his prospects in 2024 as you see the politics of our country.
Well, I think he would likely to be a loser in the general election again. Whether he can assemble a primary victory is hard for me to say. It probably depends on things like who runs against him and how many people run against him, because he still has a cadre of support on the Republican side. So it's too early to say. As a Democrat, we obviously salivate at the prospect of being able to defeat President Trump again. But as an American, I'd like to see a healthier body politic and would love to see somebody who believes in our Constitution, our system of governance, and believes in the integrity of elections on both sides of the aisle.
Just to translate that, whether it's President Biden or someone else, the Democratic nominee defeats former President Trump. No question in your mind.
I'd say of course there's a question in my mind. I think that the odds are in favor of the Democratic nominee against President Trump. But President Trump did overcome those odds and defeat Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College despite her victory of the popular vote.
Got it. So there's a situation playing out in Memphis right now, and it may be of national concern. Someone was killed as a result of police beating this individual after a traffic stop. We've been notified that lots of people around the country and state agencies have been notified when this videotape from the body cams is released, there could be demonstrations, unrest. To what degree have you been notified about this, and are you preparing here in Colorado?
I have been briefed on it. Like you at this point, I have not seen the video.
Right.
It's not been released. I can tell you that Colorado has taken some steps in the direction of making sure that our police are respectful. We restricted qualified immunity, and we also added a body camera requirement for law enforcement. So we are by no means immune to this national trend, but we do pride ourselves on working with law enforcement around ensuring accountability.
From your perspective, Governor, how raw is this issue, either in Colorado or nationally, the idea of trust policing and excessive force?
So we've expressed our, my goal as governor in Colorado is to make Colorado one of the 10 safest states mm-hmm. over the next 5 years. And you can't do that without building trust of law enforcement in the communities they police. And so through community initiatives, through training of law enforcement, we of course need to make sure that people in every community in our state don't hesitate to report crime, to cooperate with law enforcement in holding criminals accountable. Law enforcement can't operate in a silo without the trust of these communities. And there's many communities in our state that have built that trust and continue to strive to every day. And there's other areas that need to do better in that regard.
Are you personally bracing for this video?
Well, I when it's publicly available, I will watch it. Again, at this point, I don't know the contents of that video.
But you, like me, know it sounds bad.
From what we've heard, yeah. And so I will view that, and I'm sure that the American public, myself included, will also be following what type of accountability exists in Memphis for those who perpetrated this act.
That is the voice of Governor Jared Polis, Democratic Governor of Colorado. I'm Major Garrett. Segment two of The Takeout in just 1 second.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. I promised to tell you why I'm in Denver. Well, many thanks to the good people at Tattered Cover, an independent bookstore right here in Denver. I was here on my book tour, self-financed, as almost every book tour is, at least for humble authors like me. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the book, The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. Purchase it. I promise you. You have my word. You will not be disappointed. Governor Polis, you mentioned crime in our first segment, and you stated in your State of the State address you want Colorado to be within the top 10 as far as safety. Let me read you a headline I came across in Axios from December. Colorado car thefts are soaring and growing more dangerous. I read a lot of articles before I sat down with you about car thefts, carjackings, and this idea that this is sort of spiraling out of control in Colorado. What are you doing about that?
So in terms of bills that are just taking impact, we want, you know, part of the reason that cars are stolen is there's carburetor theft, so we've cracked down on that. We are seeking in our legislative package to actually provide funding to district attorney's offices to prosecute auto theft, because what we're finding is, like law enforcement agencies, DAs have limited resources, and so in deciding what to prosecute, sometimes auto theft has fallen by the wayside. So we are seeking to support them in doing that. We're supporting stronger criminal penalties, particularly in our state. Right now, there's a different class of penalty depending on if the vehicle value is under $2,000 or more than $2,000. No, most vehicles stolen are worth more than $2,000 anyway, but we want the same legal tools to go after the thief of an $1,800 car than we have for a $5,000 or $10,000 car, as well as looking at technology and how we can have better license plate reading and tracking to ensure that stolen cars are recovered sooner and those responsible are held accountable under our law.
You know, Governor, that there is a perception, and part of it is because Republicans say this over and over, but I want to get your evaluation. The Democrats, because of the progressive elements within its party coalition, are taking their foot off the accelerator when it comes to either law enforcement or prosecution or jailing those who break the law. Your overall philosophy as a governor about that issue?
You know, I feel that the Democrats offer a much more comprehensive approach to public safety and reducing crime. I mean, Republicans have kind of one note, and they say tougher penalties. And there's some truth to that. Yes, that's part of an overall strategy. If tougher penalties alone somehow solve crime, there'd be jurisdictions in this country with no crime. But in fact, you have crime rates that are as high or higher in areas where, for instance, they even have felonized possession of small amounts of marijuana or other drugs. We obviously don't in Colorado, marijuana is legal. Other drugs are generally up to a certain amount, more of a misdemeanor than a felony. But if it was that, I'm somebody who looks at evidence and data. So we just look at what are you doing and do you have a high crime or low crime rate? And we can learn from jurisdictions led by Republicans and Democrats as to what we should do. So clearly, yes, in some instances, including in auto theft, tougher sentencing is part of the picture. But what else is part of the
and
picture?
People are clamoring for action here in Colorado.
Absolutely. And part of the picture is more funding for law enforcement and prosecutors, more funding for community organizations that can prevent crime before it occurs, more support for behavioral health responses and dealing with underlying behavioral health issues before a crime gets committed. And using technology for better monitoring. So there's a lot of solutions. I wish it was as simple as you fix the penalty and crime goes away. The evidence shows that's simply false, and we need a comprehensive approach to make America safer.
It's been my experience, Governor, that those in your position pay obviously very close attention to what's going on in their state, but they also look around the country for cautionary tales or things that are happening that might come into their jurisdiction. And I'm curious if you've paid any attention to this situation in Newport News, Virginia. A 6-year-old was at school, shot a teacher. People have now resigned. There's a lawsuit. There are allegations that repeated warnings on that day were missed. And this was a behavioral issue. It is an accountability issue. And what? A 6-year-old shot a teacher in an American classroom? As a cautionary tale, what do you take as a governor from a situation like that? And are you thinking proactively any differently about how school districts or classrooms operate in Colorado?
Well, we take school safety very seriously. In fact, even during my time as governor, we had a school shooting, the STEM school shooting in Douglas County. We lost one young hero, Kendra Castillo, who died taking down the perpetrator, and many others were injured. Visiting them in the hospital the day after was one of the harder things I've had to do as governor. One of the things that we have proposed with our legislature is a one-stop shop for school districts and schools on school safety, additional funding for physical hardening and improvements in our schools, making sure we meet the behavioral health needs of our schools. Colorado established the iMattersColorado.org program. Every student is eligible for 6 free mental health counseling sessions. So you find that many young people in crisis simply don't know how or where to access mental health services across our entire state. They now have access to that through iMatters Colorado.
It's a shocking situation, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing, you know, every time there's, of course, in this case, a particularly young person, but anytime there's a shooting, a stabbing, an incident at one of our schools where whether it's teachers or students are jeopardized. It's an immense tragedy, even above and beyond the victims directly affected. It's about that fear factor that members of that larger school community feel going to a place that they should feel safe and ready to learn.
Exactly. Related to this, not on the school safety side, but curriculum, as you're well aware, there is a roiling debate in Florida set in motion by the governor, Governor DeSantis, about advanced placement teaching of curriculum related to African Americans. As you watch that debate play out, as we're speaking, Illinois' Governor Pritzker has weighed in on this. Your thoughts?
I haven't seen what my colleague Governor Pritzker said, but I would generally say I haven't reviewed the curriculum for that course, nor should I as governor. I don't view that as my job. There are probably going to be schools in Colorado that choose to offer that. There'll be students that choose to take it if it's offered.
It's an elective,
like any other course. it's not a governor's job to micromanage the curriculum of what schools in their state are offering. And we have 178 school districts. They have locally elected school boards. And as long as the kids are meeting our academic standards, and we measure that, their achievement in reading and writing and math, the last thing a governor should be doing is micromanaging the curriculum.
Is there some grandstanding going on here?
It sounds like it. I don't know, you know, how a governor like Ron DeSantis can run a big state like Florida and still find time to review the AP curricula for a course that hardly any students are going to take. That's certainly not something I do in the course of my day.
He went out of his way to say that part of that curriculum talks about the queer experience in Black America and saying that's an agenda item. Do you find anything potentially either unsettling or dangerous by about circling that aspect of it? Does it make the atmosphere around LGBTQ members of the curriculum of the school or the school district in Florida, or just in general, does that create any alarm bells for you, identifying that part of the curriculum as something potentially agenda-driven or ideologically suspect?
Well, I mean, look, LGBT people have been part of history from, you know, Alexander the Great through, yes, relevant to the movement for equal rights for African Americans, Bernard Ruskin and others. So, I mean, you don't sweep it under the rug. You don't highlight it. It's just part of history. I mean, people are people. They're diverse, and men and women, people of different races, people of different sexual orientations. I mean, you just have to. History is something that should be told objectively. People can form their own judgments and lessons from it. But you certainly don't.
But you can understand how some in that community would say, "Wait a minute, that feels threatening to us."
Well, I certainly hope not. It's history. It is what it is. I mean, you study
for the governor to say there's something wrong with that means to them possibly there's something wrong with them, and there's this larger conversation in our country right now about the threat matrix for LGBTQ.
Yeah, I don't think any part of history should be swept under the rug. It doesn't mean that people today should be made to feel guilty for the sins of their ancestors. And I think there's some validity in those who want to make sure the curriculum doesn't include things that make today's Americans feel guilty for wrongs of the past. But of course, you have to tell history as it is. And so that means talking accurately about egregious institutions like slavery that occurred in our country, the fact that LGBT people had very difficult time through much of our nation's history. Women didn't have equal rights until relatively recently in our nation's history. So, you know, these are not subjective content areas. It's objective history of what occurred. And so you certainly can't erase a particular group from that history that we share of how we got to where we are.
The voice of Governor Jared Polis. We're here in Denver in the governor's office. Glad to be here. I'm Major Garrett. Segment 3 coming your way in just 1 second.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Democratic Governor Jared Polis of Colorado is our special guest. Governor, you sent migrants to New York City, did you not?
Well, what we did in Colorado was a little different than that, Major. Effectively, as you know, we are on one of the main arteries mm-hmm. out of Arizona and Texas. So there were people passing through Denver that got trapped here because of the unprecedented winter storms, the breakdown in national travel around Christmas time, Southwest, the storms in the bus system. So we had people that were stuck here 2 or 3 weeks longer than expected, and we helped them reach their final destinations wherever they were.
So that's different than what Governor Abbott and Governor DeSantis did.
Well, anybody who's intellectually honest would of course, say it's completely different. Mm-hmm. One is empowering the agency of people who are on their way somewhere to help them get there. The other is...
And they told you where they wanted to go.
Absolutely. They're on their, they've been on their way to a particular destination for mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months, by the way. And when they were in Denver, they were frustratingly close because they had been through jungles in Mexico. I speak Spanish. I met with many mm-hmm. of the mostly Venezuelan community to hear what they had gone through for 3 or 4 months and so close yet so far from where they were headed, separated only by a huge winter storm and a breakdown in national travel infrastructure. So they were here for a few weeks and were able to leave after those conditions ended. Very different than somehow using migrants as a prop and sending them to a place where they don't want to go as a stunt, which is really kind of an inexcusable way to kind of use people to tell your story, whatever it is. We all have our issues with immigration. We need to fix them, but you don't use the people themselves as props.
You mentioned you were in Congress for 10 years. You listened to the circular, never-ending but rarely productive debate on immigration in Washington. You're a governor now dealing with real-life consequences. Give me your thoughts on where things are, where they need to get to.
So obviously I still and have supported comprehensive immigration reform, secure the borders, pathway to citizenship for people here. I don't know if that's going to happen. So at this point, I think another solution might be good. It's not a permanent one, but if Congress would simply empower states to provide provisional work permits, then states could do that according to their will. And we would do that in Colorado. I think many
Let states experiment with that.
And we can't confer citizenship. We get that. That'll take an act of Congress someday.
Right.
But let us provide provisional work permits to meet our needs for people that are in our states. And I think you would even have some conservative Republican governors using that in a limited way. And we certainly
because
would
almost every governor is experiencing a labor shortage of one kind or another.
Here in Colorado, we have 2 job openings for every unemployed.
Do you
person.
Want to do that the way you did in your State of the State address?
Do you want? I can do that again. So we were talking. It wasn't out of context. I was doing a Star Trek reference, and I said, 2 job openings for every unemployed person Colorado has, because I just quoted Yoda in the mm-hmm. previous sentence.
You have a labor shortage, and the point is, if you allow states to experiment with provisional work permits, nothing else. That would help.
I think there's so much frustration at the state level because states, we're not the ones in charge of securing the border. We can't. Colorado doesn't even have a border with an international country. We can't provide work permits. And yet we have people living here that we want to be able to legally enter our workforce, whether it's for ag jobs or service sector or across the skills mm-hmm. continuum. And if Congress can't figure out how to do that nationally, at least move forward with letting states do this.
Assess the quality of the Biden immigration policy for me. Governor?
Well, mostly they need action from Congress. I mean, I certainly have called on the Biden administration to do specific things. One of those is better securing the border. Another one is providing temporary protected status to Venezuelans who've entered the country, providing them the ability to work provisionally until their asylum claims are processed, rather than them have to rely on public support, let them earn their own living for the next year as those claims are adjudicated. Most of my criticism would be from Congress for lack of action.
There have been some recent steps taken by the Biden administration for those seeking asylum to push them off, and some progressives are very unhappy with those. Are you supportive of those?
Well, again, I if you're talking about the more recent, I think they want people to be able to apply for asylum while they are outside the country.
Yes.
What I think would help the most is speedy provision of asylum to people who have meritorious claims.
More rapid adjudication.
Get it done, because we need the workers, we need the people. People are in limbo. Many of them, by the way, most have legitimate claims in that they simply cannot return to their home country at risk of death to themselves. And we need people who are able to fill important jobs in this country. So let's connect the dots and make it happen.
In most of America, where populations are concentrated, housing is the number one issue. I don't think journalistically we do enough to talk about housing, so I want to have a long conversation with you, if you'd be so kind. I watched your State of the State address. A lot of words about housing, but they sounded sort of general to me. So what are your specific goals? Can you break down for Coloradoans how many units you want to create, by how much you want to reduce the gap between affordability and lack of affordability? Can you be more specific about what your actual goals are for the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, so I mentioned the word housing mm-hmm. a couple times.
You did.
And even during the campaign season, really this is one of the top things that I campaigned on, because it's one of the top pain points for Coloradans. What does that mean? It's a pain point. Simply speaking, housing costs too much in our state.
As it does in many parts of our country.
Average home price, $600,000 in the Denver metro area. Rents have gone up faster than incomes. Housing costs have gone up faster than incomes. Even if they've been stable or down a little bit off their heights a year ago, the actual cost is higher because of higher interest rates. So, I mean, if you're actually buying a home, you know, let's say a $640,000 home with $620,000, your monthly payments are still quite a bit higher because mortgage rates are higher. So it's become less and less affordable. We have to take action. What does action mean? To a certain extent, housing and the price of housing is very simply kind of economics 101
from college. Supply and demand.
Supply and demand. And it's a wonder. It's great that there's such demand in Colorado. It means people want to live here. It's mm-hmm. because of our great skiing, our great quality of life. In fact, there's a lot of jobs. So we want to focus on supply. And there are artificial constraints on supply, namely getting the time and cost and denial of getting permission to build. And so we want to take that head on. Faster approval time, cutting red tape, allowing for more density near where jobs are, meaning near cities and other centers where people commute to.
Are smaller homes part of this? Mini homes, micro homes,
yeah,
whatever the terminology is.
But obviously, a smaller home can cost less. And so if somebody can get a starter home and build equity for $200,000 or $250,000, maybe later in their life they can afford from their equity gains a $600,000 or $700,000 home. But we just don't have that on the market right now. We don't have a lot of homes in the two or three hundreds. Mm-hmm. You have to go very far out. You're talking 45-minute commute
time. Which adds commute times,
traffic,
congestion,
poor
everything.
Air quality, all of the and the cost of the state for building more roads and lane widening. So there's a lot of hidden costs to that. And as we develop from a sustainable water perspective, a traffic perspective, a livability perspective, we need more people. We need to make sure more people have the opportunity to live close to where the jobs are.
So give me a number, 100,000 units, 10,000 units, 50,000 units?
Well, the reason it can't be a number is it depends on the demand side, which we think is strong now, but that depends on larger economic trends than this. What we need is more supply. And so we want to bring supply online that exceeds demand. So I mean, if demand is 100,000 homes, we want supply to be 140,000, so prices go down rather than up. I don't have the lever over demand. In fact, if anything, I want demand to remain high because Colorado's a great place to live and we want to keep it that way. But we have to make sure that supply exceeds demand. For the last 20 years, demand has exceeded supply, which is why we've seen a price increase.
Mm-hmm. All right. In the legislature, there are initiatives to either change or protect athletics at the high school level from transgender students. What do you think of that?
Well, I not in our legislature, you're talking about other states.
Yeah,
I haven't seen them here in terms of particular bills. In general, this is another matter like, you know, AP curriculum where states should not be intervening. I mean, this is perfectly capable of having your local youth sports league, or in our state, it's CHAZA, which is the High School Sports Association. Absolutely, they should deal with eligibility and make sure that it's fair and done in an inclusive way. And state lawmakers shouldn't be forcing them to do one thing or the other.
Is it inherently discriminatory to wade into this space?
Well, it shouldn't be politicized. I mean, if I was running a youth league, it would be tough to figure out, right? I mean, they're trying to strike the balance between making sure young people can participate, but also making sure nobody has an unfair advantage, and let them do it. I mean, that's what they should be doing. And I absolutely believe there's people of good faith that run these sports organizations, whether it's your kid's little league or whether it's the High School Sports Association, that are doing that. When it becomes politicized, that's where it creates larger problems.
Even though some in state legislatures here or elsewhere might say, well, my constituents are clamoring for an answer. They want an answer at the state level. Is that not being responsive to those voices?
Yeah, I mean,
one way or the other.
The answer is my kids play Little League. Well, my daughter plays Little League baseball. It's a co-ed league, so there's no issue with the gender thing. But if I was upset with something they were doing, I would try to get on the board of the Boulder
handle
Little
it
League
locally.
And change it. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. That's how you change things. You don't seek a one-size-fits-all state law, especially for these, you know, difficult, challenging areas where there's data emerging. I mean, I think, look, you want to be of good faith here. Should we generally make sure that kids can participate in youth sports? Of course, right? We want to be eligible, whether it's kids with disabilities, whether it's kids of different genders, of course. Do we also want to make sure that nobody has a competitive advantage that's unfair? Yeah, of course you want to do that. So just figure that out in good faith. I mean, try to get these weird, you know, political issues out of it.
Try to figure it out. That's the voice of Governor Jared Polis. I'm Major Garrett, segment four of The Takeout in just 1 second.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. We're a little bit more formal this week. We're in the governor's office. Governor Jared Polis, Democrat of Colorado. Governor, it's great to see you again. Listen, I'm a native Californian. In your State of the State address, you said, we don't want to be like California. What's wrong with California?
Well, I mean, we wouldn't mind having beaches, but what I was referring to very specifically in that speech is cities in California with average home prices above $1 million, 16-lane freeways, which I didn't even know existed. I looked at it,
they're real.
16 lanes. But not only that, I mean, bumper to bumper for, like, not just rush hour, but it's like rush half day, right? I mean, you're talking like 7 in the morning to like 11. And
hello,
then like,
L.A.
Yeah, right. So that's what we don't want. That's a lack of planning. We want to make sure people can live closer to their jobs. We don't need more and more bumper to bumper traffic, more affordability, not less, more ability for both purchase and rent to live close to where you work.
You also said in your speech, State of the State address, water is life. As someone who grew up in the West, anyone who understands real hardball politics in the West knows that hardball politics doesn't get any harder than over water. That's going to get harder in the future, is it not?
It's all about water. And so, first of all, there's a nexus to housing policy, meaning if people can afford to live closer to where they work rather than exurban sprawl, duplexes, triplexes, much more water efficient. So it's a much more realistic way to grow, much more sustainable way to grow from a water perspective. But secondly, yes, there's some conflict brewing between Mountain West states over water scarcity. Now, first of all, Colorado, Utah, I mean, we're in a stronger position as upper basin states, certainly the more severe consequences, Arizona, Nevada, California. But there's going to be, because of a changing climate and because of increased population, some challenges and conflict ahead regardless.
And how do you assess Colorado's approach to climate change and the West's approach to climate change?
Well, there's two aspects.
Behind the curve, ahead of the curve?
Yeah. First of all, of course, we're proud to lead the way on renewable energy, doing our part. We have a goal of 100% renewable energy by 2040. But regardless of what states do, the impact of a hotter, drier climate is already upon us in Colorado. We have drought as the new normal. We've had a year-round fire season. In fact, during my 4 years as governor, Colorado experienced the three largest wildfires in the entire history of the state of Colorado.
You said in your State of the State something that California's been known for a while. It's not fire season anymore. It's fire year.
It's fire year. And so, you know, part of that response, of course, is upping the bar in fire response, you know, adding capacity, aerial attack, space intelligence on fires, ground fighting support for our firefighters. But in many ways, it's sort of preparing for this new normal. We established a climate response office looking across agencies like agriculture, natural resources to say, how do we prepare for what the modeling shows is happening and will happen in the next 5 or 10 years so that our farmers and ranchers can continue to thrive, so that our wildlife can continue to thrive, so that we reduce the risk of fires by building community defense perimeters and taking down fuel in areas of our state where that might not have been as much risk 5 or 10 years ago. So we want to get ahead of this.
How's the winter been for you? Lots of snow I see on the mountains.
Yeah, come ski. We're at about 120% of snowpack in many of our award-winning acclaimed ski areas, Vail, Aspen. We encourage everybody to come visit our state.
Still drought situations, though, and one snow season does not alleviate this problem.
No, we always have a natural variance, and the snowpack in the mountains has some correlation to the water supply, but we still have drought conditions across our main agriculture corridor, which is eastern Colorado. We have where the water table on some of the aquifers continues to lower, and we have a difficult time with our irrigated agriculture. So it's become an ongoing challenge in our state.
For the nation, explain the pluses and minuses of cannabis policy as you've experienced it here in Colorado.
Well, Colorado is a pioneer in legalizing cannabis, both recreational as well as medicinal. It's gone very well by any indication. What does that mean? It means it's helped drive out the underground economy. We've actually have a lower marijuana use rate for underage youth because of that, because it's harder to acquire because of the legal ways of acquiring it. We have generated over $1 billion in tax revenue, tens of thousands of jobs, and help make sure that we have a rational approach that inspires confidence. And what the voters endorsed in our state is regulate marijuana like alcohol. It's something that people can use recreationally if they choose. If you use it in moderation, that's your choice. Doesn't mean you get the right to show up to work drunk or high. You don't. But we know whether you're watching a Sunday football game, if you have a beer or two, whether you smoke a joint, that's entirely your business. It's up to you. It's freedom.
Mm-hmm. And what could the federal government do to help out?
Oh, a lot. That's been a point of great frustration even since my days in Congress. Number one, they should effectively nationally leave it up to the states, remove the national prohibition on marijuana. That includes providing fair tax treatment to businesses engaged in legal marijuana activities, 280E.
So it doesn't have to be a cash thing.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be cash thing. Let them bank. Let them take their business deductions. Treat it like any other controlled substance. Let's look at tobacco and alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. We're not...
Put it in that category.
Put it in that category.
And under that regime.
Yeah, exactly. In Colorado, you have to be 21.
What's the resistance? When you talk to the administration about that, what's the hang-up?
I think the frustration is, I think they probably have the votes to do that. I mean, the House has even passed, they call it the SAFE Act, the Marijuana Bank. Overwhelming. I mean, you know, bipartisan majority. It probably had 60 plus votes in the Senate, but they find the floor time. What was it attached to? It kind of fell by the wayside. So just do it. I mean, just do it. Like, you have the votes are there in Congress, and I think President Biden would be supportive of it as well. I haven't heard. I know he's called for some reforms in this area, but just send it to him. Let's have majority votes. You know, let's get it done already. It's past time.
There's an experiment that will soon be launched here in Colorado with mushrooms. Explain that.
Voters have passed an initiative just this last year to legalize mushroom therapy, meaning this is a kind of a scenario where you might have heard about this from friends. Often it's in Mexico and other places. People go for a form of psychiatric therapy where they help break the cycle of addiction, overcome depression. And it's generally been illegal in the United States, so people have had to go to other countries. Colorado, I think, is the second state now, Oregon and Colorado, where we are looking at a statewide way of doing this. So that means making sure it's safe, it's some form of licensing for therapists, still a controlled substance. I mean, it's not that anybody can sell this. You can for your own personal use, but you can't just open a store and sell it. But how do we do this in a way where veterans and those impacted by post-traumatic stress and suffering from depression can seek this alternative if they choose?
You have a reputation of being somewhat nerdy and technology embracing. Have you or will you ever give a speech written by ChatGPT?
Actually, it's interesting that you asked that, Major. I did type in there. I played around with it, of course, and I said, give a speech given by Jared Polis. And it did spit one out. It probably was vague, but perhaps passable. So I don't expect that I would, but it's really fun to watch these technologies, and I did look at that. And
are you averse to that technology, or are you embracing of it?
Well, I think all technology can have great positive ramifications and also some challenges to overcome. So, I mean, AI has great potential and, of course, risks associated with it as well.
I mean, academics are like, oh, God, the kids are just going to have the computer write their papers.
Well, maybe they need to go back to pen and paper and have them write in those little, when you and I were there, those blue exam books. You remember those where we would just have to scrawl
painfully
out?
I remember them.
Well,
Governor,
maybe
yes.
They have to. Maybe what's old is new again.
Very good. That is the voice of Governor Jared Polis, Democratic governor of Colorado, recently reelected. What was the margin?
19.6 points, but who's counting?
The governor's counting, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Major Garrett. For the radio audience, we'll see you next week. For those on the podcast, Outtake Especial is next.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. This is the fun and games, but one thing before we get to the fun and games with Governor Jared Polis. Governor, election denialism is something I've paid a lot of attention to. I've written a book about it. There is an extremism component to it. You've experienced both in Colorado. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, we're proud of our election laws in Colorado. People can register and vote on Election Day. We have a safe, secure mail-order ballot, but people who don't want to use that can go in person and vote. But we also, like every state,
but you've had controversies in this state.
We have election deniers, and it's a very scary thing because despite the independent audit and despite oversight by the state and confidence in a fair electoral system, there are people who simply live in a factless environment, instead believe in conspiracy theories with no basis.
And that will exhaust itself in America, or what?
Well, look, I think we should continue to lean into being open and transparent about how elections
explaining
work,
how it works,
bringing people in.
Let them see whatever they want to see.
Let them see what they want to see. Not how you vote, but I mean,
obviously
see the way it's counted and make sure it can be looked at independently and verified and paper trail for ballots. I mean, all of that. The more confidence we can inspire, the better.
I get this question all the time. I'd like your perspective. If Trump would just go away, this would go away. Yes or no?
No, of course not. I wish it was that easy. I'm of the strong opinion that's not the case. I think that he's a symptom of our malaise rather than a cause.
Fun and games part. So we have questions we've asked every single guest on this, nearly every single guest. There have been a couple of exceptions. There's been a particularly news-heavy environment. But we're going to have some fun and games here now. So maybe Connor, your estimable communications guru to our left, has prepared you for this. Most influential book in your life, all-time favorite movie. And if you're driving across this beautiful state or flying, if you have to the nation's capital, and you're going to listen to some music and really enjoy it, what kind of music, artist, or genre is that most likely?
So you went through several questions. I need you to ask them again there. So it was book?
Most influential book, all-time favorite movie, class music that is the best that you can think of and indulge in.
Like a particular performer?
Yeah, or art, genre or artist.
By the way, I was very excited at my inaugural gala. We had Belinda Carlisle, They Might Be Giants, and Carly Rae Jepsen. So those.
That's pretty good.
But who did we want even more than that? Dolly Parton, but she couldn't make it. Sorry, Belinda and They Might Be Giants and Carly, but Dolly is in her own category. When I was first elected to Congress, we packed everything up in my car. We drove out east. We went through Tennessee, and we went up to Dollywood for this, where we spent one night. It was the last night before we made it to D.C. So that was we had a great time in Dollywood and really enjoyed it.
So Dolly Parton would be the answer.
Dolly Parton would definitely be the answer to everything.
Okay.
Everything. Favorite book, I would say...
Or most influential book, a book that really rocked you in a sort of positive and memorable way.
Gosh, you know, I am a voracious reader. I really enjoy both fiction and nonfiction. I have to think about that. Give me a moment.
Sure.
I'll come back to that.
Movie you like?
Let's
and the
see.
Way I help people to work through that is if you're scrolling and you come across it, you stop. Or it's like just your favorite movie and you know it like the back of your hand.
Okay, I would say from the comedy world, Death Becomes Her is a great movie. Mm-hmm. Remember that classic? I absolutely, as a huge nerd, like both the Star Wars and Star Trek franchises. Mm-hmm. Some movies are better than others, but of course... Star Wars, you know, 4, 5, and 6, and Star Trek.
I'm all over 4, 5, and 6. I'm not with you, Governor, on 1, 2, and 3. Sorry.
Well, do you know, why did they come out in the order 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3? Because in charge of the order, Yoda was. There you go. Book I would go with, I'd probably go with Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. Mm-hmm. Really amazing, seminal work, and I've... You know, read it across several different parts of my life, and very much an inspiration.
So, that is consistent with one of the characterizations of you as a neo-libertarian.
Well, I don't know, you know, how people characterize me. I just say, you know, hardworking, data-driven, roll up your sleeves to make life better.
So, there's one other person who's been on this show who mentioned Atlas Shrugged as a very important book to them.
Who was it?
Mick Mulvaney.
Oh, is that right? Mick's a good friend. Mick,
and he and I had a very lengthy conversation because I don't like Atlas Shrugged.
Okay.
I like The Fountainhead.
Okay, interesting. That's more for the creative soul. You're a creative soul. I was more of a business person. But they spoke to two different sides of people. So,
yes,
yeah,
and, I think The Fountainhead is a much better book than Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Shrugged is a little too pound, 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 same thing over and over and over.
There is a 50-page speech in it. That's kind of hit me over the head with it a little bit.
But Mick Mulvaney and you are the only two who have mentioned Atlas Shrugged on the show and answer that question.
Well, Mick was a good friend in Congress and a great guy, and I'm sure that you would find others who also found that as one of their inspirational works. But I think people... who are fundamentally artistic, whether it's in journalism or art or obviously literally architecture, would find The Fountainhead kind of more apropos. Myself as kind of a business person, Atlas Shrugged, in terms of literary merit, mm-hmm. I can't really comment on that.
Right.
My husband is an English major. He probably could. I don't know if any of them are great literary masterpieces.
Right.
I don't think I would maintain that. I think it's more about the philosophy.
Exactly. And
by the way, she was remarkable in how she wrote. She would literally dictate and write like a draft and have it done. I mean, minor change. I mean, just like boom, like pretty much dictate mm-hmm. a novel, which is very hard to do.
And if you're curious, the book Fountainhead, infinitely better than the movie, The Fountainhead. All respect to Patricia O'Neill and Gary Cooper.
You know what? It's
not a great movie.
That's because it's hard to get, 800, 900 page book into like a 2-hour movie. I mean, good luck.
Governor Jared Polis, thanks so much.
Thank you. Good to see you, Major.
We'll see you next week, folks.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I'm excited to announce season 4 of my podcast, Mobituaries. I've got a whole new bunch of stories to share with you about the most fascinating people and things who are no longer with us. From famous figures who died on the very same day to the things I wish would die, like buffets. Listen to Mobituaries with Mo Rocca on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.